Les colloques du Collège de France.
Welcome back, everybody, to the second session this morning, when we have two very interesting presentations. And I would first like to introduce Christoph Rauch, who is the head of the Orientabteilung, the Oriental Collections of the Staatsbibliothek zu Berlin. Very, very nice collection. And Christoph is going to talk to us on data-supported collection history, provenance information in the Kalamos portal using the example of the Berlin collection. And I think probably that there is no one in this room who has not benefited from the wonderful Kalamos portal. Over to you, Christoph.
Yes, thank you very much for this kind introduction. And I want to thank the organizers of this conference also, because I enjoy the talks, I enjoy the atmosphere and the good organization. And today I want to speak about provenance data. I think there is a huge interest in provenance research during the last years, because people are more interested in translocation of manuscripts, in contexts like colonial context, imperial context of manuscript transfer. And of course, people are more interested in the reception history of the manuscripts themselves. And therefore, it should be a main task of libraries in our days to include data on the history of objects into the manuscript description and online catalog. So I will today speak about what we did to include such data in the Berlin collection into the Kalamos portal. So first of all, I want briefly mention our Schelfmark group. So since the second half of the 19th century, the Berlin State Library, also former Prussian Royal Library, acquired a lot of manuscripts, about 40,000. Most of them are cataloged within the Schelfmark groups according to the collectors, yeah, like Wetzstein or Dietz or Petermann or Sprenger. So the sellers became the Schelfmark named. And then, of course, a lot of manuscripts were acquired in the Manuscripta Orientalia Schelfmark series, MSO from 1828 on. They were recorded in the accession books until the Second World War. And after the Second World War, the modern state library in Berlin uses this HSO, Handschrift Orientalia Schelfmark group. But even during the last 50, 60 years, we acquired more than 15,000 Oriental manuscripts in Berlin. So if it comes to accession documentation, of course, first of all, the accession books are the most important source, and we should use, but a lot of information on the circumstances of acquisition and contextual information we receive from other material, like correspondences with on the acquisitions, or letters or reviews on certain collections that were offered to a library. And in some cases, also additional information is found in travel accounts or in biographies of collectors or orientalists. And of course, the most important information is found in the manuscript itself. And I think this is what the manuscript differs from in which the manuscript differs from other art objects from the Middle East or Asia, that manuscripts contain a lot of information on its history itself. So we should be aware that if we deal with accession information in the library context, we scratch only the surface of a history of manuscripts, because they traveled often very much before they came into the hands of Orientalists or German collectors or European collectors. So the basement, or the fundament for doing a lot of data import into the manuscript description with regard to accession data is, of course, that you need a solid database, a catalog. So we prepared during the last 5 years this Kalamos portal. Now it is next year it will be completed as a project, and we converted all the printed catalogs, historic printed catalogs, and data from the big cataloging project KOHD, cataloging Oriental manuscripts in Germany, and from the database KOHD to this Kalamos portal. And hopefully next year we can say that almost all Oriental manuscripts from Asian and African traditions are in German collections are part of this portal. And so the descriptions are divided into certain sections like content, description of the physical aspects, and history of the objects. So if it comes to history of the object, for the first mentioned Schelfmark group, so the collector Schelfmark group, it's an easy task. You just have to write a script to add the authority record of the seller to the record, to the description, combined with the provenance with the year of accession, and also with the place of origin, if possible. In the case of Wettstein or Glaser for Yemen, it is quite easy. You can say Syria or Yemen is a quite general information. And of course, part of the history of the object section also is the actual copying of the manuscript, the name of the copyist, if available, and other things. And of course, this manuscript notes, we are happy that we can provide this in some cases, but we rely on this totally on the work of the Bibliotheca Arabica project in Leipzig, because Boris Liebrenz collected all this information, and we are happy that we can provide this also as part of our catalog. In some cases, we are able to provide provenance change, because in this example from the Dietz collection, most of the manuscripts Dietz acquired in Constantinople during his stay, end of 19th century, but not all of them. So this manuscript Dietz acquired later from auction in Uppsala. And if we have from additional acquisition sources or handwritten catalogs, we have the information who were the previous owners of this manuscript, and then we also add this information in the form of this provenance chain. But it becomes much more difficult if it comes to the MSO, the Manuscripta Orientalia group, with more than 12,000 manuscripts, and we found a way to import also the data from this accession books to Kalamos. Of course, first of all, we digitized the accession book, but so it's accessible for everyone, but this is not, in this way, it's not searchable. Yeah? So we have not searchable data if you can just browse a digitized copy of the accession books. So we started with interns to transcribe all the information from the accession books into an Excel sheet. And I think in this case, it was a very good to do, because in some cases we see efforts to just digitize catalogs, handwritten catalogs, and then you work with HTR and name entity recognition. And so in some cases it would be possible to identify persons and to find information, but we thought for a limited set of records, in this case about 12,000 manuscripts, I think it's worth this investment of time to create structured data and to link it to authority records and then to import it to the Kalamos portal. So we used OpenRefine to standardize and homogenize the data, and then we imported it into as part of the description of the manuscripts. And what now is a result is, this is just one random example of about 500 sellers or donors who provided manuscripts from 1828 until 1942 to the State Library. And so it's about, yeah, so 450 persons. And you, in the ideal case, also other collections would provide such data, and this would make it's possible to connect acquisitions between different libraries. In this case, manuscripts provided by Max Meyerhoff are also found in the University Library in Bonn and in the Humboldt University Libraries. They have a very small, interesting collection we discovered recently. And also the Max von Oppenheim collection has manuscripts acquired via Max von Meyerhoff. And of course, Cairo is a very interesting place at this time. Yeah, Max von Oppenheim lived in Cairo. Bernard Moritz lived in Cairo at that time. and later Alfieri, the book dealers, or Robert Yehuda, I think was his name, also has a bookshop in Cairo and provided manuscripts to many libraries and institutions. So it should, in the future, we still work with the geographical names, but it should be also a way not only look for names, but also look for places to identify manuscripts that were translocated from certain places. But this is difficult because the accession books in most cases only provide the information of the last owner, and the last owner who sold the manuscript to the library, and this last owner mostly had a location in Europe, and so in many cases we don't have information where the manuscript was acquired in the Middle East, for example. So it, I now want to show you what we can, just an example of a few on the data. So if you see this timeline from 1828 to 1942, you see in the this orange lines are the acquisition of collectors like Wettstein or Sprenger or Petermann. And in this blue lines are the MSOR acquisition. You see that in the second half of the 19th century, the majority of manuscripts were acquired in big packets from certain persons, and later it was more manuscripts were acquired from a variety of previous owners and were more catalogued or registered as MSOR. MSOR shelf marks. So this is maybe not so much of interest here, but I think it's more interesting if it comes to the language. So I, according to the years of acquisitions, I sorted the language in which the manuscript were acquired, and I ordered it in 5 years columns, yeah, to make it a bit more, how to say, anschaulich, yeah. And you can see that in the from 1850 on, a lot of Arabic manuscripts have been acquired. There's an already mentioned collection of Wettstein, Sprenger, Petermann. And then the acquisition stopped, and the library decided more to acquire manuscripts from South Asia. And then again, there came this, the Landberg collection and the Sachau collection in yellow. And the Glaser collection, this was the end because Glaser brought manuscript from Yemen, and it was the first manuscript collection that came from Yemen, and so they decided to acquire it. But then they stopped, yeah, because Albert wanted to complete his catalog. He said, we don't want to buy Arabic manuscript anymore. And at some time. And also, I think the library administration came to the decision that they have sufficient Arabic manuscript and they should complete the collection at this moment. And also in the end of 19th century, American universities more and more acquired manuscripts, and so the prices were rising, and the library in Berlin said it's not worth to compete with such prices. American universities in Yale or Princeton are willing to pay. And so they continue to acquire Indian manuscript via certain connections, Georg Bühler, Bhagwandas, Kewaldas from India. And this is interesting that also in this time they rejected certain collections. So it's Landberg offered a second collection and he reduced the price he wanted to receive, and there were a lot of three reviews requested from scholars outside the library, and some were in favor of the collection, but Eduard Sacher said, we don't need these books anymore, they are too expensive, only modern copies. When Landberg said in response to the modern copies of a good Orientalist are much better as an old original, which is corrupt in the script. Yeah. So it's very funny to study also these reviews on collection. But you see, it's what I want to express here is it is not just random of the offers and what was offered on the market that we have a certain periods where we have Arabic manuscripts and then certain periods where we have this Indian manuscripts in green color dominating. But it would be, from my point of view, interesting to see whether this correspondence also with the usage of the manuscript. Yeah? Of course, some of the scholars like Wettstein or Sachau or Petermann, they taught in Berlin. So after they received, they brought the collection to Berlin, they could use manuscripts also at teaching at the university. And it is interesting to see the readers' registry of the reading room in the Berlin State Library. And this is saved from 1881 on. And I, so all books that were lent to the reading room are documented here. And I just used a certain sample of 1885 until 1899 to see what manuscripts have been used in the reading room. Yeah? After all this thousand of manuscript acquisition, one should ask, at least our director would, today, if I come and ask for budget, he says, is someone interested in it? Yeah? Today, it's a very standard question, unfortunately, in this library administration. And if you see the result of this period, of this 15 years, you see, surprisingly, that Syriac and Hebrew manuscripts are very often were requested in the reading room, and Arabic manuscript as well. And I think this is interesting to see so many Syriac manuscripts, because they were just acquired a year before. And this collection of Syriac manuscripts before the Sachau collection came to the library was very small. And it's interesting, that's why I have chosen this period from 1885 on, because Sachau as well as Landberg, which collection was also acquired in 1884, they provided a small hand list or kind of catalog published, because the library administration said you should publish a short catalog that the world should see that we acquired this manuscript, because nobody knew when Alward completes with his catalog. In the case for Arabic manuscript. And so it's interesting to see that in the next 15 years, 633 loans of Sachau manuscripts, Syriac manuscripts, to the reading room happened, and 100 for the Landberg collection. Of course, this is not a very solid comparison, because the Landberg collection is a part of a much larger Arabic collection at the library. But what was interesting for me, and I think what deserves more research maybe in the future, is a reception history of the manuscripts when they came to the library. And it was interesting for me to see that many of the readers, yeah, it's maybe a bit difficult to read now for you, it's more a simple picture here. But you see that many of the researchers who entered the reading room came from the context of the rabbinical seminary in Berlin. And there were many Jewish Orientalists. Jacob Barth was at that time very active. And a lot of people who came to access the manuscripts in the reading room did not come from the university only, but also from the rabbinical seminary. And you can see that during the next 10 years after the Sachau collection was acquired, a lot of publications, dissertations, and tractates were published on the Sachau collection, on the homilies contained there, or on the works of Bar Hebraeus, this universal scholar from the 13th century. And this was a top favorite. Yeah, in the reading journal, you see that this homilies from the Sachau collection was a manuscript that was most often requested. And what is interesting is what with the language that were not used at this time, like the Ottoman Turkish manuscripts, they're obviously the losers at that time. Nobody was interested in Ottoman Turkish manuscript in this period. And in the 1860s or 1850s, when Petermann traveled to the Middle East in order to acquire manuscript commissioned by the Prussian government, the librarian said to him, don't buy Ottoman Turkish. We have already the Dietz collection, we don't need more. That is sufficient. And you see that Ottoman Turkish was not used, and nobody was interested at that time. But the acquisition of Ottoman or the Turkish manuscript started in the early 20th century. And there was, of course, there was a change. Yes, political and economical relation between Prussia and the Ottoman Empire increased. And then there was this Turfan expedition and more interest in language studies. Yeah? And so the first acquisition in the early 20th century, where you have this Cree for Turkish manuscript, was related to Martin Hartmann, yeah, who traveled to Central Asia and was also in a way connected to this Turfan project. And of course, what is also important is that in 1918, the Oriental Department at the State Library was founded with Gotthold Weil as a director, the later director of the Hebrew National Library in Jerusalem. And he worked, he taught at the Seminary for Oriental Languages in Berlin, which was had more this practical approach to train language which were in usage for diplomats and for colonial staff and so on. And he published an Ottoman Turkish grammar in 1917. And it's obvious that from that time on, there was an interest in the acquisition of Turkish manuscripts. And on the one side, it is already stated by others that there was the market situation in Turkey changed completely after the closure of Sufi lodges and the alphabetic and reform and also the education reforms after the end of the Ottoman Empire. But this is only one side, and the other side is that Berlin became much more interested in such material. It was good that they had persons like Helmut Ritter or Oskar Rescher living in Istanbul who could provide manuscripts to satisfy the rising demand in Berlin. So this is just the examples I wanted to give you today on what you could do with such accession data recorded in a online catalog, besides just the positive information on names or manuscripts that were acquired from certain persons. There are many next steps to do. Of course, we started to prepare also the transfer of data information from the more recent acquisition. It is interesting that often it's easier to speak about acquisition from the past, because if we come to the 20th century, some of the actors are still alive or among us, yeah. And so, so someone hesitates to speak about recent acquisition. But if you analyze all this acquisition documentation and so on, you see that there is a lot of similarity between the habits in the 19th century and also in the 20th century. And so it would be necessary for us also to provide this data, especially if it comes from professional dealers, also online in our database, and we prepare the data. And then, of course, it is important what I said in the beginning, not only to focus on accession data, and we applied for funding at the German Research Foundation together with the Bibliotheca Arabica project and with the University Center of Manuscript Study in Hamburg, and for a project on a sealed database for Islamic manuscripts in German collection. And thing was that the Dublin Chester Beatty database is not existent anymore, it's not online anymore. And in Turkey, there are a lot of activities. For example, they published a huge database with a lot of seal impressions, but the seal impressions are not linked to manuscript copies. So, this was the idea of a future project within the Calamos framework to catalog seal impressions and to enable computer-based search of digital collections and to enable also scholars to provide data or to check their digital copies, whether there will be a match between seal impressions that are part of our database and their manuscripts they have. So, yes, and what also, I come to the end, what also would be a future dream is that a portal like Calamos would become more international, because manuscript acquisition and the history of provenance and translocation is not a national issue, as we know, and it would be good to have more data available from different collections in one system. We now work in the framework of our Calamos project, we work together with smaller collections from Norway and the National Library in Helsinki, and currently we include data from Leiden University Library and also from the National Library in Prague. But we would interested to start a new project to expand the perspective maybe more on more European collections. And what is our experience from the Calamos project is that that there are lots of smaller collections that were not known at all. They have just hand lists, and they are sometimes in school libraries or in monastery libraries, and they have interesting collections, but often they are not known and not accessible. And I think this will also be the case in other European cities. And I would would be a dream to start such a project to collect systematically such data from smaller collection in Europe. Thank you for your attention.
Collège de France, le savoir en illimité. Retrouvez tous nos contenus audio et vidéo sur notre site collège-de-france.fr, les plateformes de podcast et nos chaînes YouTube.